Good morning. You're listening to NPR News. I'm Ewan Kerr, sitting in today for Tom Webber. For the rest of the hour, we're going to focus on the confluence of two things which most of us, maybe all, have had experience but probably have never thought of together. I'm talking about fairy tales and postcards. We're doing this because we're lucky enough to have one of the world's leading experts on fairy tales, Dr. Jack Sipes, living in our midst. His new book, Tales of Wonder, Retelling Fairy Tales Through Picture Postcards, examines what was once a huge pastime, and as a result, a large industry, both here and in Europe. We would love to get you in on the conversation. If you have any antique postcards depicting fairy tales which are special to you, give us a call at 651-227-6000 or 1-800-242-2828. Or if you have a question about the origin or meaning of a fairy tale, give us a call too. Jack Sipes is Professor Emeritus of German and Comparative Literature at the University of Minnesota. He is a regular speaker at conferences around the world on all aspects of fairy tales and their importance. Thanks for coming in today.
Thank you for inviting me.
Now, let's maybe go back to basics. Why do we tell fairy tales? I mean, clearly people love them, but they also have this often an underlying moral component.
Yes, they do. But we tend to think that fairy tales were created mainly for children, but that's not the case. Fairy tales go way back beyond the Greco-Roman period and were generally told for different reasons by adults, for adults or for families who gathered around the people who wanted to tell tales. I think that basically these tales really help us through, help us understand the existential problems that we have living on this earth. And more so even today, because life has been so conflicted.
Well, I wanted to ask you about that because, you know, we're just even listening over the last half hour,
yes.
Kind of a tumultuous time we're living in.
Yes.
And, I mean, how does a fairy tale, say, help us with what's going on at the Capitol?
Well, I think a tale such as Little Red Riding Hood, which is a tale about a predatory wolf, i.e. a man, who tries to violate a young girl. And in many cases, in many of the tales, he succeeds and the girl is punished. In fact, the most famous literary fairy tale by Charles Perrault, who wrote this in about 1696, has the ending is, and so the wolf opened his mouth and gobbled up Little Red Riding Hood. And it ends that way. And then there's a moral at the end of that tale. Little girls who invite wolves into their parlors deserve what they get. Now, this is a very typical male or patriarchal type of ideology that women are responsible for the acts that men cause, such as sexual harassment or abuse or assault. And this tale is probably, of Little Red Riding Hood, is known throughout the world. It's not just known in France and Germany, the two countries where the tale was made famous. But it really is surprising in the work that I've done, both collecting postcards and but also collecting tales and translating them. There are by far thousands more versions of Little Red Riding Hood throughout the world than one really can imagine.
And many of them do have a different ending, which is a little more positive, perhaps.
Yes.
Although very bloody.
Yes. For instance, there's a Chinese version in which a bear or sometimes a tiger is after Little Red Riding Hood's sister, and she climbs a tree and throws down a spear or some type of branch that has a pointed edge to it and kills the bear or the wolf. So it ends rather bloodily. But in a very positive way, showing that women can defend themselves.
You know, I think it's interesting that at the Walker in the sculpture garden, there's actually a statue which depicts a figure which is essentially Red Riding Hood stepping out of a wolf, a dead wolf, having survived being eaten, which is perhaps, I don't know, it's quite a striking image.
Yes. That's, by the way, an image by Kiki Smith, who's one of the great contemporary artists, who has done a whole series of Little Red Riding Hood, either sculptures or paintings.
Let's talk about your book, Tales of Wonder, which it focuses on postcards. It is, I mean, it's a gorgeous book, a huge book, which has got a myriad examples from postcards that you have collected over the years. That we still see postcards a lot, but in these days of texting and email, they've become more of an afterthought. But at one point, they actually had a really important social function.
Yes.
What was that?
Well, when postcards, people don't realize that postcards are somewhat of a modern invention, and they were developed by publishing houses or manufacturers toward the end of the 19th century. And it wasn't until about 1890 that picture postcards, because they were so inexpensive and were distributed very quickly, sometimes 3 times a day in European countries, the mail would be delivered, and you could write messages on the back of them that either communicated an appointment of some kind or some greetings or news of some kind. So that the social function of the postcard, whether it was picture postcard or just plain postcard, was basically how we use the internet today, or the telephone to a certain extent. And the manufacturers or the publishers realized that they could make these postcards attractive by putting a picture on the back of it, and you could write a message on the other side. And also, they felt that, well, we should make it attractive in some way and have either a tourist place or ships or new inventions on pictured, either paintings or photographs. And of course, because at that time, the Germans were very famous in their printing technology, they began looking into the fairy tales of the Brothers Grimm. And immediately, they did series, photographic series of retelling the entire story with 12 different picture postcards, quite often using children and very unusual ways. And then famous painters began doing scenes from all types of fairy tales in Russia or France or Germany, Italy, and so on, Pinocchio, for instance. And that spread to England, of course, with Peter Pan, and then into the United States with Rip Van Winkle. And, of course, there are fairy tales with Johnny Appleseed and Paul Bunyan as well. And the function of was manifold because people just wanted to connect with their friends, and they might choose a fairy tale postcard because it would say something to their friend. I maintain, and some of my colleagues in the fairy tale studies think I'm a little sort of, I wouldn't say crazy, but a little extreme in trying to look at fairy tales as memes, that is, as memes that actually stick. And and I've tried to explain that to a certain extent, fairy tales are really known. It's the only genre where these tales are known throughout the world, and they cognitively stick in our brains, so that there's an immediate recall. And these tales, because these tales are so let us say, representative of major problems, as I mentioned before, existential problems, like in we have child abuse in Hansel and Gretel, or in Donkey Skin we have incest, and it's a metaphorically these tales represent problems that remain with us that we haven't resolved, and so there's an instant recall that we have when we see images on postcards and are tempted or allured to buy these cards. And once I began writing about the development of fairy tales, wandered into an exhibit in Paris for the first time. This goes back about 40 or 50 years. And I noticed these fairy tale postcards being sold at this fair. And I said, my God, I haven't seen anything mm-hmm. like this. And I immediately bought the cards. And then I became somewhat obsessed. And in the past 40 years, I've gathered over 3,000 postcards. And in the lovely book, The Tales of Wonder, unfortunately, we could only do about 700. But
that's still quite a collection.
Yeah, it certainly is.
My guest today is Dr. Jack Zipes. He's Professor Emeritus of German and Comparative Literature at the University of Minnesota and the author of Tales of Wonder, Retelling Fairy Tales Through Picture Postcards. If you'd like to join our conversation, you can call 651-227-6000 or toll-free 1-800-242-2828. One of the things, of course, you get when you have collected all these postcards is you get the messages. Mm-hmm. And it's interesting looking through the book, seeing trying to decipher some of the handwriting, what people have written. I mean, was there anything very profound that you found as you scanned through your collection?
First of all, it was very difficult reading the handwriting. In a lot of the postcards have German messages, and the handwriting was a type of handwriting at the beginning of the 20th century that Germans don't use anymore. And I, in my training, was not sort of trained or became capable to decipher this. But most of the postcards I could read, because I read about three or four different languages. And generally speaking, there's a sense that the writer has chosen this particular postcard because it will have some type of effect on the recipient of the postcard. And I've tried to, as best I can, to decipher a lot of the messages. And in fact, there are probably 20 or 30 postcards in my collection are cards sent to me by friends who know about or knew about my obsession. And so they've chosen all sorts of fairy tale postcards to send to me. One came from New Zealand, and it's a long postcard, and I would say it's about 5 inches or 6 inches long and about 2 or 3 inches high. And on it is a girl coming out of Little Red Riding, coming out of the forest, and the wolf is approaching her and says, "Well, haven't you gotten me my Facebook message? We're supposed to meet here on time," or something like that. And so it's astonishing. When somebody knows you might be interested in a particular fairy tale, the postcard will be sent.
That one is not so much of an antique, though.
No, it's a rather recent one. And it just shows you that even though the internet has taken charge of messaging and so on, that people still use postcards and continue to send them for whatever reason.
I was quite taken by that there are certain, as you say, certain memes, certain recurring themes. And so we see Little Red Riding Hood. We also see Cinderella. But of course, because there are so many different versions of these stories, I was just amazed to learn that there's an entire version of Cinderella where there is no fairy godmother, but it is doves who not only turn up with the gown and the carriage and everything, but they do it three nights in a row. I mean, this. Did you come across versions of the stories that you had not heard before?
Generally speaking, not through the postcards, but through my other research in terms of trying to understand the origins of a particular tale. Like another book that I wrote recently was called The Sorcerer's Apprentice, an anthology of magical tales. And in that book, I trace the sorcerer's apprentice. There are two types of apprentices, the humiliated apprentice and the rebellious apprentice. And I trace that way back to the Greco-Egyptian times.
But of course, this is probably a story that many people know because of the Mickey Mouse
version. Exactly. But there are literally, I would say, I've collected myself about 500 different versions. And in my book, I could only publish 50. But what is interesting is that the primary version is very critical of the Disney version because, for the most part, the apprentices learn enough magic to defeat a sorcerer who knows black magic, and the apprentice tries to bring about some type of social justice.
It's fascinating that the memes that do seem to keep coming through, why is it we don't kind of invent new tales? Mm-hmm. Why do we keep going back to the tried? Well, maybe because they're tried and true.
Yes. And also, I think, you know, quite frankly, it's because these critical issues have not been resolved today. I mean, we have not resolved almost all of the problems that the characters in the major classical fairy tales experience. And so we try to adapt these tales as much as possible to address the contemporary problems. Like there's that wonderful play made into a film, Into the Woods, which deals with about five different fairy tales all at once and ends on a somewhat of a tragical note. And it's a very powerful adaptation and just shows, I would say, the impulse in these tales tend to be very much directed at key things that we're still experiencing and not able to deal with in a really happy manner. The sort of happiness in fairy tales is sort of a utopian dream that we have. We want to resolve and have a happy existence. We want to deal with these conflicts. And one of the reasons why fairy tales stick around is that they show the hope that we have. And they also, to a certain extent, lead us to meditate more, contemplate more how we might resolve the problems that we have.
We're talking today with Jack Zipes, Professor Emeritus of German and Comparative Literature at the University of Minnesota. He is the author of Tales of Wonder, Retelling Fairy Tales Through Picture Postcards. And we have Lorraine on the line from Northfield. Good morning, Lorraine.
Good morning.
You have a thought.
Oh, my gosh. I've been thinking about this subject for a very long time. How long, you may say? Just last week, I turned 70, which amazes me. So,
congratulations.
My earliest fairy tale influencing my life was the King Arthur and his knights stuff. And you know the role of women in there, not too good. Well, then later we get to the big thing was Star Trek, and that influenced me. And I saw it influence the world around me, that was so popular. It was in everybody's head, even if they didn't go to the movies, and women's role improved. And then later it was Lord of the Rings, and now I see it as anime and costumes on our, you know, the heroes are out there climbing walls and doing things ordinary people can't. But look at the role of women, how it changes. So did Wonder Woman's role improve because Wonder Woman was there? or is she now prominent because women's role has improved? I think they inform each other, but I see the role of the modern fairy tale changing the way that people are thinking about their world, even though they don't notice it. And I've been collecting Cinderella tales for a long time, and I love the version from China.
Yes.
Well, thank you, Dr. Zeus. What do you think?
Yeah, definitely. I would say that the if you look at the Disney heroines in from the 1930s and 40s and 50s, they are all more or less look the same, like Barbie dolls, helpless, yearning for a prince to save their lives. And with the women's movement in the 1960s and 1970s up through today, Disney has been forced, the Disney Corporation, that is, has been forced to try to develop heroines who are much more forceful and much more autonomous. So there's no doubt that there is that the movements with regard to, again, social justice, with regard to dealing with raising children, problems with the imaging of women, has been reflected in the cultures, in art, and also in the postcards. The postcards can be very hilarious at times, making fun of men like wolves and showing that women are just as capable of living without princes and having a very happy life.
You know, one of the chapters I found really fascinating in Tales of Wonder is the section on Russian postcards.
Yes.
And the way that many traditional stories were, I don't know what, massaged, manipulated, changed, rewritten after the revolution.
Yes.
Well, first of all, they were kind of condemned as being bourgeois and you weren't meant to talk to them, but then they reemerged.
Yes.
In a fascinating way,
right.
Including the Wizard of Oz story. So what actually happened there?
Yes, well, fortunately, Stalin died in 1956, and under his regime, for the most part, fairy tales, anything fantastic, marvelous, miraculous, was looked down upon as something for the bourgeois, escapist. And Stalin only wanted a type of socialist, realist type of art. And once he died, the gates, so to speak, were opened. And
of course, there's such a wonderful tradition in Russia of
huge
folk
tradition.
Tales.
I mean, just think of the Baba Yaga tales that are famous throughout the world.
Still gives me chills.
Yeah, so there was an explosion, and Russian artists are just really highly creative. And so I would say that the best fairy tale, let us say, postcards today, or let us say since the 1960s, have been the Russian postcards.
And the way that they told, I mean, Pinocchio becomes a story of kind of collective a struggle against the corrupt masters of the puppet theater.
Yes.
And
yes.
Things like that. It's quite extraordinary.
Yes, yeah. And a lot of their tales are rewrites of the tales that were told in Italy and also in England. They also retell Peter Pan, and so that the social realism that comes up to a certain extent, because they make the tales much more, let us say, concrete with regard to the way children are manipulated and exploited. So there is this Russian version called The Golden Key that a Russian, famous Russian author wrote in the 1930s, and that's where you get these amazing postcards that came out in the 1960s.
We've only got about a minute and a half left, but is there a holy grail out there, a postcard or a series that you are seeking now that you hope that you might be able to find?
Yes, in fact, there is, again, this goes back to Russia. There's a famous tale called the the humpbacked pony or the humpbacked horse, and I collected about 10 different Russian and Ukrainian versions of this in postcards, and I'm collaborating with the University of Minnesota Press, thanks to Doug Amato, and we're bringing out, I've rewritten a this it's actually a long poem about the humpbacked horse, and it'll come out as a children's book using these postcards as images in April or May of this coming year.
Wonderful.
And it's called The Fearless Ivan and His Horse Double Hump.
Wonderful. We'll look out for that. Jack Zipes is Professor Emeritus of German and Comparative Literature at the University of Minnesota. His new book, published by the University of Minnesota Press, is Tales of Wonder, Retelling Fairy Tales Through Picture Postcards. Thank you very much for coming in today.
Thanks again, Hugh.